welcome to the Broncos Week edition of X's and Omar, presented by Gulfstream Park, alongside Sun Sentinel Dolphins columnist Omar Kelly. I'm CBS 12 Sports Director Matt Lincoln, and we are once again here at beautiful Gulfstream Park here at Hallandale Beach. Even more and more, we've got a sleigh back here. It is feeling more and more like the holidays. There, you get the feeling it's harder to get parking spots because there are people here shopping, really enjoying.
Santa has allowed us to use his domain for the show.
He is. Is this the rest of the season for sure?
He's on lunch break.
It's perfect. Well, you know, if Santa wants to come back early for lunch break, I know there's some things like we can ask for, like an end to the 5-game losing streak, please.
Or the season.
This is either one, right?
Yeah.
And the losing streak, or
put
just
me out of my misery.
I feel that, and it felt like it got even worse in Foxborough, where these things tend to do. A 35-17 Dolphins loss, in which it seemed like the Dolphins were never really in the game. There was a little maybe glimmer of hope in the third quarter.
On the first Patriots drive, it was a 3-and-out, and then it led to the punt.
A fake punt.
At the 27-yard line. It was Bill Belichick slapping the Dolphins and their fan base in the face, saying, "We don't think you're a real team.
We don't think you can do this. You got lucky that you stopped us on third down.
We're going to put you on the 27-yard line, and we still believe we're going to beat you."
And what happened?
They beat them.
They proved to be correct.
It wasn't even a competition. It felt like the Dolphins were a JV team playing a state championship team. And just to put it in context, because we know it's state championship time, unfortunately, I don't think I went in with higher expectations. Vegas told us it was going to be a slaughter. And it really matched the line that Vegas created.
17.5 was the line, and it was an 18-point Patriots victory. Vegas said before the season started, 7.5 wins for the Dolphins. And what do we say? All this disrespect for the Dolphins. 7.5 wins? 7.5 wins is a team that made the playoffs last year. Look at their roster. They're better than they were last year. Disrespect. Vegas is always right.
I don't know if they're always right, but certainly it shows that this team is falling short of expectations. I have a hard time believing that they're as bad as they really are. But early in the season, when I was like, you know, hey, they were 4-3, and I was like, man, those 4 wins, you better be thankful for it, because there's no aspect of your team that is playing well. And here we are a month later, still not a single aspect of the Dolphins team is performing up to expectations. You had some good defensive performances, but the offense has never shown up all season. Special teams hasn't even come close to meeting expectations. It's just a lackluster team, and I have a hard time believing that things will get better in the final five.
Well, there's a lot to talk about as we try to figure out if there's any reasons for optimism, any things to look for going forward the rest of the season. But before we close the book on this Patriots game, as we'd like to close it as quickly as possible, any glimpses, did you see anything during that game where you went, I like that, that was a good play, this was nice, anything you saw?
No. No.
Okay.
There's nothing to build on. You went into that game with Matt Moore. I think we can, you know, it's hard to evaluate Matt Moore against the Patriots or the Baltimore Ravens. But, you know, there was no semblance of life from the offense. Receivers weren't making plays. Kenyon Drake fumbled the ball. He scored a touchdown, but really the run game wasn't very impressive. Saw nothing from the tight end. Defense allowed opponent to just run all over them. Struggling, can't cover the tight ends. Big plays all over the field. Cornerbacks not being able to stick with wide receivers. Just hodgepodge of buffoonery.
And it's getting worse because these injuries are mounting. Looks like serious injuries. As we've seen with William Hayes going on the IR, you had said it on the show multiple times, he's probably the best guy the Dolphins brought in the offseason.
Top run stuffer.
And it seems like Damien Williams might also have a serious shoulder injury.
Yeah, these are tough issues that the Dolphins are going to have to overcome. I'm not necessarily certain that they've got a player capable of filling William Hayes' shoes, just because Charles Harris, the first-round draft pick, he's a situational pass rusher. You need a guy who's going to set the edge, stop the run. That's not going to happen. Terrence today is a journeyman, a decent special teams, back end of the 53-man roster type of talent. But now you're calling on him to play 20, 30 snaps a game. If they don't move Ndamukong Suh to defensive end and sort of elevate the interior guys, Jordan Phillips and Vincent Taylor, I really see this team struggling. And now in terms of Damian Williams, Kenyon Drake is going to have to step up and become a featured back, a featured
talent.
They
don't have a choice. There's no one else out there.
No one. They're going to promote Davion Smith from the practice squad. Yeah, he's at Michigan. He was.
Right.
Yeah, but you never know what can happen. But yeah, Kenyon Drake, this is going to be good for him because he's going to have the opportunity to show us whether or not he can be good in pass protection, whether or not he can be good running the football.
Whether or not he can hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
Because that's been an issue for him.
Two fumbles so far. That's definitely something that has to be addressed moving forward.
And maybe we'll finally see Charles Harris. We really haven't seen him make much of anything.
I've seen enough. He's a young player. You know, the interesting thing about Charles Harris is I said coming into the draft, I didn't even see him as a factor for the Dolphins just because I saw him as a 3-4 outside linebacker. He really couldn't set the edge. And lo and behold, you know, they drafted him saying, oh, man, we got to get that pass rushing ability. He's contributed one sack, and he can't set the edge. Okay, so you drafted exactly who you got.
Do you see a possible transition to a linebacker spot maybe going forward?
Too early to say. Probably another season of this level of production, and then you're probably going to have to reassess.
See what else you can do. All right, let's take our first question from legendary Keith Sims.
Yeah, man.
Explain why the O-line drafting has been so bad. Why could I and Richmond Webb come in and play as rookies when they went 12-4, but these new O-linemen can't touch the field as rookies, or they never mature and become good players and true professionals?
You know, that's a great question by a guy who was amazing on the Dolphins offensive line, and he's been a great businessman in the community as well. I don't think it's a fair criticism from this standpoint.
Okay.
Laremy Tunsil, Juwan James, and Mike Pouncey all came in, started right away, and played fairly well. Now, are they world beaters with the exception of Mike Pouncey? No.
Right.
Laremy Tunsil, he was an adequate guard. He's been an adequate left tackle. Certainly, we'd like to see him transcend and elevate the level of his play. Juwan James, decent, respectable starting right tackle. Now, will I pay him $9.4 million for his fifth-year option moving forward? Absolutely not. But I would definitely explore re-signing him for something a little bit more conservative end of the salary spectrum. Now, the question is, what about the young guys? There's been a lot of draft picks. Billy Turner, Dallas Thomas, Isaac Asiata, Jameel Douglas, who have not developed and have not panned out and have not helped this offensive line. And yes, there's a developmental issue going on, but those weren't early draft picks with the exception of Dallas Thomas. Those weren't really high elevated draft picks. And I think that that's really what this organization needs to do. If you don't feel comfortable investing a first round pick in an offensive lineman, fine. I understand. I get it. They aren't important until you're team gets their face beaten in because you can't pass protect or you can't open up running lanes, which is what happened in 2017. But you should be investing second, third, and fourth round draft picks in that position until you have a respectable offensive line, because I make this argument to you and to those who do not believe that offensive line is an important position, and I know you do not share that opinion because we've been here.
We are unicorn fans.
When you struggle to run the football, you put pressure on your quarterback. When you struggle to protect your quarterback, you put pressure on the quarterback and the play caller. When you struggle to stay on the field, you put pressure on your defense. To me, the Dolphins' problems begins and ends with the offensive line.
Sure.
Penalties, false starts, struggle to convert fourth and one. Yeah, fourth and one is a lot on the back, but he needs a hole. Somebody's got to move somebody, and you poorly, and poorly is an understatement, assessed the talent that you had on the offensive line, assessed the caliber of players that you had as backups, to the point where when you were struggling, you had nobody to go to. You were just stuck. And that would perfectly and accurately describe what's happened to the Dolphins all season. They've just been stuck.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take umbrage with one point you made, and that's about Juwan James.
Uh-huh.
Juwan James was a first-round draft pick.
You drafted a right tackle
you
as a first-round.
You drafted round. A right tackle as a first-round draft pick.
Which
you
is gotta a bad,
think
which
down
is a,
the
which
line.
Is, which if, is a no-no.
If he works out, you're going to have to pay him $9 million, $10 million down the line. That's what a first-round tackle winds up getting made. So if he is not good enough to make what good first-round tackles should be making, then he's a failure.
I wouldn't say that. I would say you drafted him a right tackle in the first round as a mistake. Okay. It was a mistake. Not talent-wise, but a right tackle isn't the most important position on the field. He's not even the most important position as on your offensive line. And the problem that you're having with that situation is if you give him his $9.4 million 50-year tenure, you'd be making him the third highest paid right tackle in the NFL. Does he perform like he's the third highest paid right tackle in the NFL?
No, he does not.
Okay. Doesn't mean that he's not a good player. Doesn't mean that if Juwan James is waived by the Dolphins, he's not going to go start for 20 other NFL teams. And there isn't going to be a bidding war for Juwan James. It just means you're not paying him $9.4 million. Yeah. It doesn't make financial sense. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not going to do it. Because, hell, they could decide that this is the best approach for us because we don't want to go into a bidding war for an offensive lineman. But it is what it is. You made the bed. You have to lay in it.
So we'll get into this, I'm sure, ad nauseum going forward. But how many positions are really worth paying first-round money to?
The five premier positions, unfortunately. Sometimes the draft doesn't pan out that way, and you got to take the best player available. And I'm a firm believer in taking the best player available. Sometimes it just so happens to be a guard. Sometimes it happens to be a tight end. You know, to me, the one second guess special that I can make is Charles Harris or the University of Miami tight end.
Njoku.
And David Njoku. And while Njoku isn't lighting it up,
he's done a hell of a lot more than Charles Harris has done for the Dolphins.
Now, Charles Harris has a lot of players ahead of him on the depth chart and a lot of players who could do better things than him.
For sure, and we've talked about how they really haven't had a chance to rush the passer all year because they haven't had a lead. But so it's not all on him.
Not all on him.
But you'd like to see some glimpses of something.
Absolutely. There are other rookies who are playing better.
All right, next question from Octavio. Do you think the new offensive line coach can fix the Dolphins' O-line without having to change the whole roster?
No. I think you have to change the entire line with the exception of Laremy Tunsil and probably Mike Pouncey. Mm-hmm. Everything about it isn't good enough. Depth-wise, they're not good enough. You know, the master plan for this offensive line was, okay, we're going to purge Brandon Albert because he's aged and he's old and he's expensive. We're going to put Laremy Tunsil there, and he's going to become our bookend anchor.
Sure.
Okay. Has that worked? It's been okay.
Right.
But you need that position to be reliable, consistent, solid, top performer. Mike Pouncey, he's so busy. And I would say Mike Pouncey is probably the offensive player who's performed the best all season. But he's so busy holding the hand of the left guard and the right guard, he's not getting to the second level and helping out the run game. You got to get better in that aspect of the game. And until you do, your run game's going to be trash. And that's what happened. So I'm curious to see what happens to Jesse Davis moving forward, whether he's the right guard or the right tackle. I think that he has the starter potential as long as he doesn't fall on his face in the first five games. But the other positions, you got to address something. You got to do something there. You got to get two good road-mauling guards in order to get a surge.
All right. You are watching X's and Omar presented by Gulfstream Park. We are live here in beautiful Hallandale Beach, right on the edge of the great Christmas tree. Lots of people taking selfies out in front of it, not as much taking selfies in front of our show, unfortunately. But that's okay.
There was a guy that was filming our show. Oh. Yeah, I did see that guy.
All right. Do we need to go get him because of some sort of rights?
No, we don't.
All right.
You can come and do whatever you want over here.
So the Dolphins have been terrible on the road, specifically offensively. Under 12 points per game at home, over 22 points a game. Generally speaking, home field advantage is a little overrated when it comes to the NFL numbers, but what have you seen, or why is this team a little bit better offensively at home than on the road?
You know, I do believe that the home factor helps you in terms of the crowd support. I think that stadium noise helps you from a defensive standpoint. I think the fact that it's quiet when the offense is there helps from a communication mm-hmm. standpoint, which would explain that 11-point disparity in terms of points being scored from home on the road. I think it's a major difference. Now, you know, everybody should play better at home. The Patriots, good God, they're mm-hmm. virtually unbeatable at home. The question is, have you done enough to keep your fans still in it? Have you earned the respect? And I'm at that point now where I'm like, you know, Dolphin fans, do they have reason to come out? Do they have reason to cheer on their team? Now, you should always have reason to cheer on your team, but what have they done for you lately? And this season has been a massive disappointment, and I don't think there's anybody on the team, including the players and coaches, who will say, one, they performed up to their expectations, and two, they've actually played well this season. Maybe Rashad Jones? Like, you know?
All right, well, let's take a next question from Mr. BLT. I got Miami winning one more game. So does that mean the end of the Tannehill era?
If you think that Ryan Tannehill is going anywhere as a Dolphins starting quarterback, I got some beachfront property in North Dakota to sell you. Right. Because you're a fool. He's not going anywhere. Ryan Tannehill is going to be the starting quarterback for at least the next 2 years. At his pay rate, $19 million, which is today a respectable number for a quarterback, he's the guy. And here's the thing. Anybody who says, oh, the Dolphins are going to have a top six selection, maybe they should go out there and draft their quarterback. Does USC's Sam Darnold or UCLA's Josh Rosen or Louisville's Lamar Jackson, who are the three that are in the conversation as first-round talents, do any of them look like they're world beaters in the NFL? Do any of them look like they're going to be the guys who is going to immediately going to be able to step in and give you what Russell Wilson did or give you what Deshaun Watson did before he got injured? Even Carson Wentz.
Well, yeah, but I was going to bring up Wentz. I mean, I don't know if people really – can't say that any one of these guys are significantly worse of a prospect that Carson Wentz was.
See, that to me would have to come down to being able – I saw Carson Wentz in the Senior Bowl, and I was like, yeah, he's got it.
Okay.
He's got the arm. He's got the size. He's got the mobility. He's got the intellect. And I would need to see any of them, which none of them can go because they're all underclassmen. Am I saying that, no, Dolphins should not draft a quarterback early or draft a quarterback in general? No. You got Matt Moore, who's, what, 34?
Yeah.
You've got Brandon Doughty.
Right.
Like, there's nothing there to Brandon Doughty. We've seen it for two straight preseasons. Nothing there. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have David Fales, and he can barely get a job in the NFL.
Sure.
So, yeah, you need to invest in another quarterback for the future. But Ryan Tannehill is the man.
So would you rather, would you rather them use a 5th, 6th, 7th round pick on a guy and start working him and seeing if maybe 2 years down the line he's somebody? Or are you the guy who's more like, let's go with Tannehill and draft a first round guy when we're ready to move on?
I am... you keep picking quarterbacks until you find that guy, kind of guy. It doesn't have to be in the first round. It could be in the second. It could be the third. It could be in the fourth round. To me, ideally, it all depends on what happens with Matt Moore. If Matt Moore is brought back and re-signed for another $2.5 million deal, oh, well, great. Mm. Matt Moore's a quarterback. No need to draft another quarterback because you've made it through another season where you've got a quality, competent backup. But if you're going to move on from Matt Moore, then, yeah, you probably need to draft the quarterback relatively early.
Okay. Our next question comes from Ty. At what point do we worry more about draft position than our last off-season additions? It's clear now that Tannehill is going to be our guy moving forward. So where do what we do draft first to help him be successful? Where do we draft first to make Tannehill be successful?
To me, it starts with the tight end. Now, the entire offense sort of focuses on what do you do with Jarvis Landry? Because if you don't re-sign Jarvis Landry to, let's say, a deal that sort of guarantees him $27 million, then you're going to kind of need a slot receiver.
Sure, right.
And how you get one, I don't know. That's, you know, so, but to me, the best thing that you can do to help Tannehill is upgrade the offensive line, make that pocket secure for him. We all know he's not, doesn't have the greatest pocket presence. Make that pocket secure and comfortable for him, and then get him a tight end. Mm-hmm. A tight end that can do more than Julius Thomas can.
Which shouldn't be hard to do.
Ouch.
Next question from Luke. What are the top three positions that need to be upgraded over the next offseason?
Actually, we just addressed a lot of that.
Yeah.
Offensive line. To me, I'm drafting another tackle. I would prefer to make him a left tackle, have him compete with Juwan James, compete with Laremy Tunsil. Loser goes to right tackle.
Right.
I don't care who wins. And then I'm also drafting an interior lineman, preferably maybe a center that I can move or convert to guard so that I have somebody in case something happens to Mike Pouncey moving forward in the future. But it all depends on what's there in the draft and the quality of talent. But I am going to draft an offensive line as opposed to signing one, which is a big money and free agent, just because I agree. Paying $8 million for a guard is ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. So go out there and draft them younger and cheaper and invest in them. Then at tight end, you're not going anywhere with Julius Thomas, unfortunately. No, well, that doesn't hurt anybody's feelings.
No,
but,
I don't think so.
$6.5 million for a tight end who cannot create separation and isn't that dynamic as a red zone threat. Those are the two things that he was supposed to do. Hasn't panned out. Well, when you make a bad investment, do you stick with it or do you cut your losses and got to move on? Time to move on.
Got to be humble about it.
Yeah. And then cornerback, to me, is another area, position of need. Yes, you got Xavier Howard. Yes, you have Cordarrelle Tankersley. Yes, you've got Bobby McCain probably for one more year as a nickel cornerback before he becomes an unrestricted free agent. You even have who's coming back?
Tony Lippett
coming back, but there isn't enough. If you don't have five good cornerbacks, you don't have enough. And based on what we've seen this year, the performance hasn't matched up to expectations.
Yeah, it's been a rough year for the cornerbacks for sure. All right, you are watching X's and Omar, presented by Gulfstream Park, and we are live here in Hallandale Beach, breaking down the Dolphins that have lost five straight games, and it's remarkable to think that Adam Gase has done something that Joe Philbin hasn't done, and that is lose five straight games. Does this say something about the coaching staff?
Yeah, it does. I think it teaches us that these guys have been humbled.
Yeah.
Adam Gase hasn't been humbled by now. Like, man, he's got a massive ego.
Sure.
But I watch him in his press conference, and there's a mellower, somber, more sedated tone to him. He's got a defeated feeling to him. And that, to me, would re-energize me and make me put my focus into something that I actually propose in the Sun Sentinel. You got to find what is salvageable in the final five games. Can Jesse Davis be a starting guard? Does Isaac Asiata belong on your roster? Hell, I'd be playing Asiata three series a game just to see what the hell you got at guard.
Because
it's not like it could get worse.
Yeah.
Can it get worse?
No, it can't get worse.
Okay. Charles Harris, as badly as he's played this season,
hasn't really had a chance. Hasn't had as many chances.
He's had a chance.
He's had some chances.
He's played a significant amount of snaps. He's played about, I would say, 400 to 500 snaps. And, man.
Okay.
Nah.
All right.
The containment issue is a big issue. But, yeah, he needs to play more so that he can grow and develop and learn. And maybe you learn, hey, this guy isn't a defensive end. Stephon Anthony, young player. You traded for him. Former first-round talent. I know he's injured right now, but he's a young player that you need to see, hey, do we have something we can build on, or do we need to move on from him and shop elsewhere in terms of players that can help us? You need to explore what you have on this roster to see if anything is salvageable, because right now this looks like a complete rebuild from a roster standpoint.
All right, so as they try to end this losing streak, a familiar face is coming to Hard Rock Stadium this weekend. It is Vance Joseph, who the former Dolphins defensive coordinator, who is having actually worse season. They are 3-8. What's going on with the Broncos?
Well, they had to fire their offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy, primarily because John Elway basically challenged everybody and said, "You're not doing good enough job." And somebody's head had to roll. It happened to be the offensive coordinator. They've got a quarterback quandary of a mess.
Sure.
Trevor Siemian is probably their most reliable, best starter. There's nothing special to him.
No.
Brock Osweiler, one of the most overpaid quarterbacks in the NFL. He's basically playing for free just because two teams have dumped him in one offseason. He ended up back in Denver. They haven't won.
Right.
And then Paxton Lynch gets his opportunity to start, former first-round pick. I'm a Paxton Lynch fan. He's on my man crush list. They drafted him. It hasn't panned out as well as they had hoped.
He was terrible for a half and then got hurt, and he's done for maybe the rest of the year.
Yeah, I think he was crying, too.
Was he crying?
Something, disappointment, tears.
You have a man crush guy? I'm a guy who cries?
Yeah.
After getting hurt?
Sometimes you got to be sensitive, man. It's okay to cry. Jay-Z just said crying is the biggest, I forget what, it was a New York Times video, and JC said crying is the biggest emotional statement of maturity that a man can make. Think about that.
Okay. You still felt the need to bring it up, though, when you were talking about Paxton Lynch. Do you think you're a mature? Okay, well, let's move on from Paxton Lynch crying and take our next question from Griswold. With Vance Joseph coming back to town, what adjustments does Matt Burke need to make to counter his knowledge of this defensive unit?
Well, they're quite familiar with one another. Matt Burke and Vance Joseph worked together in Cincinnati before they came here with the Dolphins, and they were sort of worked together in terms of building that defense. I think the biggest issue is Vance Joseph knows the strengths and weaknesses of Matt Burke's defense.
Sure.
He knows that Cam Wake struggles to set the edge. I won't say he can't. He struggles to set the edge. He knows that Kiko Alonso works best in space. So maybe he's going to run at him. I'm sure he doesn't know Lawrence Timmons that well, but he certainly knows Rashad Jones, who could be baited into double moves. He knows Xavier Howard's strengths and weaknesses. And you've got to give them something different than what they've seen all season on film just to keep them off balance. Now, certainly, with Trevor Siemian probably starting, it's not going to be that much of a significant challenge. But, hey, Vance Joseph has shown you that he can sneak up on you from time to time. Mm-hmm. That's how they got off to the 3-1 start. And I think what's happened to that Denver team is that teams have caught on to what they're doing offensively and defensively, and they just never evolved.
All right, next question from Mike Small. What are your thoughts about trading some veterans like Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake, Mike Pouncey, in the offseason to get cap space and more picks for young players? First off, the question is, are any of those three players tradable?
No. I think probably the only one who's probably got trade value is Ndamukong Suh. But then again, what team is really trading for a guy making $19 million? Mm-hmm. They'll probably say if the Dolphins want to get rid of him, let them cut him, and we'll pick him up. We'll make a competitive offer. But, you know, hey, you never know. Brandon Albert got traded last offseason.
Sure.
The question is, are any of those guys worth the fifth, sixth, seventh round pick that you're going to get for him? To me, the biggest decision, Cam Wake has signed a series of one-year extensions. I think he's going to end his career with the Miami Dolphins. Mike Pouncey, that's kind of the if, are you on, are you off bus. I'm personally on the Mike Pouncey bus. I'm riding it till the wheels fall off. When I say wheels, I mean the hip. I think that Mike Pouncey is a very competent, capable center. And if you add better pieces to work for him to work with, you'll get better production from him.
And we were both on the Brandon Albert bus last year. We talked about
that
too. And they didn't seem to care that much that we were on that Brandon Albert bus. And look where it got them. Next question, Jabari Morris. Is it time to give up on Devontae Parker?
You know, a lot of people's the frustration centers on the fact that he has not looked as people have billed it as Devontae Parker's going to have this breakout season. I'm throwing up too many air quotes.
Sure.
Or inopportune.
Devontae Parker is going to have this breakout season.
Yeah. I think I should have just thrown up one air quote.
Breakout.
Okay. It hasn't happened, not because of talent, but because of injury.
Okay.
There's, as I've said to you all season, one thing that I don't let wide receivers play with. Hell, we let Kenny Stills play, Adam Gase, Kenny Stills play with, hand issues. But ankle issues in terms of route running, cutting,
jumping,
deceptive speed. Mm-hmm. And for those who are fortunate enough to be out of practice like myself, or inside the locker room like myself, I could watch Devontae Parker walk and tell you he's not healthy. Now, the biggest issue that I have is people want to blame the Dolphins for playing, for selecting Devontae Parker. Okay, that's fair. They selected him an injury prone, often injured, Louisville wide receiver. And then as it's translated to the NFL, he's often injured. Okay, lesson learned. Don't do that again.
All right, so are you going to give up on him then?
No, I'm not going to give up on him again. I'm going to get him healthy. The biggest issue I have is playing Devontae Parker at 70% better than playing Jakeem Grant and Leonte Carew at 100%? And if the answer is yes, then that should tell you about your depth at wide receiver, right?
For sure. I mean, got to be. You got to think that it might be better than one catch and however many yards that one catch was for. Now, I haven't seen you say anything about it. What did you believe about Parker's role in the interception at the end of the first half? Did you feel like he gave up on that ball?
I feel like he's not 100%, and the things that you would expect a upper echelon athlete to do when they're 100% healthy is not the same things that you're going to get when you've got a guy out there playing on 70%. He's struggling just to get to the spot, much less you want him to jump high and you know, push. Stephon Gilmore, I heard this after the game, is that he said he saw it on film. He saw that route. He saw it early in the game. He knew they'd go to it again. And when they went to it again, he'd be waiting for it. And he was.
That doesn't sound like it's as much on
Parker. He said Devontae could have jumped as high as he wanted to. And that's the strength of Devontae's game. Devontae could have jumped as high as he wanted to. I beat him to the spot.
So what do you think we're going to see out of this Dolphins team?
This is probably going to be the last time all season that I'm going to actually pick a Dolphins victory.
Okay.
I am going to go with a 24-21 Dolphins victory from this standpoint. At worst, this is a 5-win team. I mean, 4-win teams are really, really bad.
Really bad. You're right.
And while the Dolphins have looked like a really bad team, I really don't think they have the talent to be a really bad team. I think they've got more, and they just need some semblance of success to build off. They haven't had it all year. This is your last chance to get to 5.
All right, I'm going to also take the Dolphins 20-17. I don't feel great about it whatsoever, but I haven't felt great about a lot of the picks for this season, and I've been proven wrong more than a few times. But we're both taking the Dolphins to win this game.
That's not going to help you catch up to me in the standings. I'm just letting you know.
I know, but I'll make it up somewhere else. You're only up a game. You're only up a game. You'll make it up somewhere else. Thank you so much for watching X's and Omar presented by Gulfstream Park. If you're watching us live, hang on tight. And we'll do X's and Omar overtime coming up in a little bit and take all your questions that you submit to us.